It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You're tired of spending money on trail cameras you use as tools only to find out they're built like freaking toys? Or you've struggled with unreliable, not so dependable cameras or experienced customer service that flat out disappointed you? I've been there. Those problems literally birthed Exodus 8 years ago when they shipped their first camera. Exodus had a clear desire to not only build elite products that enabled you to set it and forget it all season long, but also to back them like no other company was willing to, with an unmatched level of customer service and support. See for yourself why Exodus has over 15,000 satisfied customers. They've quickly become known for their 5-year no BS warranty, quality cameras, and best-in-class customer service. You heard that right. Exodus believes in their products so much, every single camera is backed by a 5-year warranty that includes theft and accidental damage coverage. Each camera is checked for quality control standards before it leaves the warehouse. If they wouldn't use it, you don't get it. Exodus is so confident you'll love your new Exodus camera, they're offering you, the listener of this show, 15% off your next order today. Just use code BTE. If you don't love it, get your money refunded in the first 30 days and just send her back. Exodus really has two excellent cell cam options for all budgets, and they start at just $179. Plus, you're 15% off there. You use the code BTE. They have competitive data plans that allows you to purchase a plan and use the data as you see fit. They want you to be in control. There's no annual commitment and no limit on how many cameras you can run on one plan. You can share cameras with friends, no charge, which makes the Exodus lineup a great option for hunting clubs and leases. There are no additional fees for HD photo requests. That's pretty nice. No additional fees for video uploads. And all cameras share data on a single data plan for easy management. See for yourself why so many have made the switch to Exodus and experienced the Exodus difference. Use code BTE to get 15% off your next order today. Now let's talk about Osseo Gear. It's a great option for whitetail hunters. They develop a premium line of bow hunting gear that will rival any other clothing on the market in quality. Plus, you got a lifetime warranty on anything you buy from Osseo, which is pretty nice. They have a super unique camo pattern and great technology in their garments to keep you comfortable in the stand. So visit asiogear.com, get you some premium hunting clothing. Gotta talk to you about Stealth Outdoors, makers of Stealth Strips. Stealth Strips really are a product that any hunter, whether you're a weekend warrior or a guy that hunts almost every day, really needs to take advantage of. The stuff absolutely deadens your gear to make it essentially noise-free. If you haven't checked out Stealth Strips yet, stop buying all the other crappy alternatives like the hockey tape and any other stuff you're trying to use to silence your gear. Get the good stuff. Get Stealth Strips. Visit stealthoutdoors.com. Pick you up some Stealth Strips. All my partners are linked in the description below. Go check them out.
All right, what's going on, guys? Welcome to today's show. We got a whole room down here in the basement at the Airbnb. I'm real excited. We got Before the Echo. We got Josh Talker.
Yep, been a little collaboration.
Absolutely. I'm excited for this, and thank you, man. Looking forward to this one, man. We're going to have a little BS session down in the basement, get into some good stuff. I got a couple questions. Josh, you got a couple questions, and Why don't we go around and introduce everybody?
Yep. I'm Josh from Before the Echo.
Joe Miles, ICO Gear.
Rendell Eric, No Balls, No Bucks.
Ryan Pledger, Infinite Hunt Outdoors.
And Justin Simon with Running, Gun, and Outdoors.
Yep. All that's right. Everybody.
Doing
we're,
good.
We're at the, what's the Great American Sports
Harrisburg, show? Baby.
Oh, great yeah. American the, Outdoor Show.
The Gayos. The Great yeah. American Outdoor Show.
Yep. It's this is the first time I've been here, and it's quite the, well, here we go. This is going to be a Rendell Eric podcast.
It is without a doubt.
Oh, man.
If you're here for comedy, yeah. If you're here for tactics, I don't know. Yeah.
This is going to be a good one. Hang
oh,
in.
Man. Show's much bigger than what I had in my mind whenever I pulled up to the parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
Monday that's been crazy. Morning.
First time.
I've been coming here since I was a kid. I grew up in Maryland, so I've been coming to the show since I was little, and it's one of my favorites, man.
Mm-hmm.
Living in Kentucky now, I always enjoy coming back. I catch up with a lot of my buddies that, you know, I don't normally get to see when I'm in town. So I really enjoy it, and I've been doing this a couple years, working the show circuit here. So it's always cool seeing the familiar faces. You know, I've made some friends here at this place, and it's a blast. And it's been fun hanging with you all today. I feel like we've made a heck of a team.
Yeah, I was going to interrupt you there for a second and just thank y'all. I mean, the amount of people that we've had come to the booth, it can get hectic at times, and y'all have absolutely handled it like rock stars.
Especially Rendell.
Yeah, especially. No, Rendell's patient with everybody.
Yes. So.
Yeah, but y'all really have, and I thank y'all so much for all the help, and it is a great team, and have enjoyed hanging with y'all, and it's been a lot of fun. Yeah,
thanks for the right, opportunity.
Right, Rendell?
Yeah, it's been a lot.
if we had a POV camera
so much fun.
In the booth, there's been some moments.
I'd like yes. to have a lav mic with a recorder.
Probably in not. Pocket.
Just for 10 hours of him at a trade
here,
show.
Well, I'd like to know what he was mumbling over there, you know?
Well, there's a bunch of mumbling going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, there was.
Not about that. And I always say, Rendell, what was that? And he goes, I was talking to myself.
Yeah.
They got really
you don't want to hear it, Joe.
It's like the guy from Sling Blade.
Yeah.
Yeah
biscuits and mustard.
Yeah.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, what topic were we talking about this morning when we said, hey, we ought to talk about that on the show last night?
We were talking about how, and this gets thrown around a lot of different podcasts. I've heard it multiple times, but somehow we got on the topic of young kids not wanting to shoot a particular deer for how it's going to be perceived on Facebook or Instagram or on social media, and how, you know, all of us here get messages. I do a lot in South Carolina of young kids, 16, 17 years old, that'll send me a trail camera picture of a really nice buck and be like, hey, you think he's old enough to shoot? You know, what do you think? Should I shoot him? And my response is always, buddy, if you like that deer and he gets you going, shoot him. You don't need to impress anybody but yourself. And, you know, we've just talked about how social media has hurt a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because that's not what we should be preaching and doing. But, I mean, it's constantly – I don't remember who it was. Maybe it was Jay Gregory that kind of – started this, and I don't know Jay, but I've seen him on TikTok and Instagram, and he does a good job with his social media, but talking about how, man, big bucks are kind of irrelevant now.
Yeah, I saw the same clip. I think it was the Hunter, maybe Hunter podcast. I can't remember exactly.
It could have been, yeah, but he said, if you want to see a 190 or 180, just flip through.
Yeah.
Flip through Instagram yeah. for a little bit.
200 incher, that means nothing anymore.
It's crazy how that's yeah. happened. And those kids are trying to live up to it.
Yeah.
And it's impossible. I was talking to a guy today. You know, our banner in the Osseo booth has got giant after giant after giant after giant.
Yeah. I sent Rendell, by the way, I sent Rendell a couple like 100 inchers I've shot with the Osseo gear on. So you can put
you
one.
You didn't make the banner.
I know. But if you want to really promote shooting two-year-olds as a young man.
That's not real world.
Right?
I mean, people like to see big deer, but that's not real world.
Yeah.
I mean, so that was what we were talking about this morning. We were drinking coffee after hitting the gym, and that was the topic that we got on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. And I was picking your brain on the way. I think I was on the way to the show about. I was like, I asked you, like, how old were you when you started really chasing big bucks? And he was like, not that long ago, like 2011.
No, 30. Like
right.
Yeah.
And I think when people realize, they look at, you know, Adam Hayes and Don Higgins and you and all these other guys that shoot all these big bucks, mm-hmm. and it's like, yeah, it wasn't always like that.
No.
Not for a long time.
No, I mean, I remember the first doe I saw in Illinois, and I about died at the size of her body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would hunt those swamps in South Carolina, and, you know, a 16-inch wide 8-point that would probably score 90 or 100 inches, my heart was about to beat out of my chest.
Yeah.
You know, that's how my dad and I hunted, and that was so much fun. And those memories we have together, I mean, you know, it'll make you teary-eyed almost. You know, the opportunities you had with those guys that meant so much to you, the social media aspect and the hate that comes out if a guy shoots a two-year-old. I mean, come on. We got to get past that.
Yeah. We need to get back to the roots, man. Like, you know, what actually makes you happy, and being a woodsman and being thankful for being out there, really. I mean, I think we all lose sight of it.
Yep.
And I know I still get my heart pumping the second I know I'm going to kill something. You know,
yeah, I mean, like, look, I like to kill big deer.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. I do. But it doesn't mean that a 16-year-old boy that's just getting started into bow hunting, that he needs to be – his aspirations to be a Boone and Crockett.
No, absolutely.
Especially in different parts of the country where they're not that many.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like my season's a prime example. Like, I had a mature deer that was probably 5 years old in front of me. And
I saw him and I was like, you're certainly going to whack this buck.
Well, I mean, man, I think it all comes down. I think you can relate to how I felt. And it's just all of us need to figure out where we're at in our journey of hunting, right? Like, I've killed a lot of deer that were that size. And I'm kind of at that point where I want to try to elevate, you know, what I'm killing. And I think it was just timing.
Yeah.
I think if you put me in that scenario next year, I'm killing him.
Sure.
But this year, I was just a little bit too hungry, and I seen a good deer that I really wanted to kill, and I went to draw back on him. I mean, it was just a perfect scenario. He came out of a cedar thicket, gave me a 20-yard shot, perfect. And I went to draw my bow back, and I just didn't. And it's like, to me, I beat that deer, mm-hmm. and it didn't matter if I killed him or not. And it's like, I thought about a younger guy, right? I know there's other younger hunters in that area, and I feel like I would be happier with one of them killing that deer and being floored than me killing him and thinking about, oh, well, maybe I should have waited for that, you know, that 150 or that I saw that, you know, the day prior. So
that's a very good point.
It is what it is. I mean, Randall, how do you feel about it? I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Kind of like Joe. I didn't start really chasing big bucks until like 30 when I moved to Iowa. I passed a lot of good deer this year that I probably would have shot now since I got EHD and it wiped me out. But I don't know, even I was texting you, and I even texted Joe pictures of this buck bedded 40 yards away from me.
Yep.
And what did I say?
Send it if you want
to. Send it, brother. If you like him, send it.
But that made me really think about, what the heck am I doing? Like, why am I worried about this right now? Like, I don't know. It's kind of eye-opening. Like, I'm going to get a bunch of hate because this buck's not a booner,
right.
You know?
That's exactly what we're
And it's only
about.
A 140. But it would have made an awesome story.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was kind of bummed because, I just lost this cool story that I could have shot this buck that was bedded by me for 2 hours. And then I went to Indiana, passed some more good deer, and I was like, oh, that would have made a cool story. I was on that deer half a day.
Yeah.
First time ever being there, and I was just like, but at the same time, I was like, I felt like I beat the deer. It was a chess match.
Right.
It's always not about killing everything, but.
Yeah.
And you know, if your goal, if you're hunting in South Carolina, make it, you know, not Iowa, right?
Yeah.
You're hunting in South Carolina, and your goal is a 125 and you've got some deer under your belt, you're not a 16-year-old that shot one doe with his bow and worried about shooting an 8-point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. You're a guy that's got some deer under his right. belt and you've got goals, right? I want a 125. Well, you ain't going to get there if you shoot a 115.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you do have that goal and you've got some stuff under your belt, there's nothing wrong with going after your goal.
Right? No.
Yeah. Yeah, I stayed steady into it. And then, and like, I didn't anticipate EHD. I was on some giant bucks the year before. That was my goal. I had it set up, and then I passed that deer, then EHD hit, and it kind of wiped me out. But if I was a young guy just starting, I would just worry about killing deer to get experience. Like,
I'm with you.
Just lay them down, man. Does, bucks, whatever. Just get on it so you get experience and you start gaining confidence, getting woodsmanship built up, because you can watch as many podcasts and hunting shows as you want, but being in the woods and doing it is what you're going to learn from the most.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, for you, Joe, like, I know you've been doing this, what, since you were 30? So what are we talking, like, you know, 15 years or
more?
Well,
I've been bow hunting for over 33.
Okay.
Yeah, I started bow hunting when I was 16.
When you got to the point where you had killed a lot of good deer, are you kind of, you know, can you relate to what me and Randall were talking about, where you kind of get in this groove where you're like, do I want to kill a 130? Or what am I trying to do, right? Like, you want to kill a Boone and Crockett, but you're midway through your season and a solid 150 comes out. You know, it's just a real mental head game. Like, so, what do you want to do? You know?
Yeah, for me, I really enjoy the chase of a particular deer. He might only be a 150.
Right.
He might be a 170. He might be a 180. At home, he might be a 115 or a 125. And that's what I like, is finding a deer and hunting a deer. And that may not be a 190,
right?
So that, to me, is what I really enjoy, is finding a deer, hunting a deer. This year, you know, I really never found a Boone and Crockett to hunt. I found some good 160-type deer and shot a few of them. And at home, I had a velvet buck early that I shot that's probably 115, 120. And then I had a 10-point in South Carolina that drove me batty. And he's probably 135-incher, which is big for – but I mean, he kept me up at night. And we're talking about 135-inch deer. But it was the game with that buck. You know, that's really what gets me going now. And it's not so much a size thing. Like, I'm not chasing 200.
Right.
I'm not chasing Boone and Crockett. I'm trying to find a good deer every year, or multiple good deer every year, that I want to hook my horns with and see if I can get him.
Yeah.
But so, that's me.
Yeah.
I mean, Don Higgins, he wants a 200-inch deer or a 190 typical. That's what he's after every year. And he may find a 170, but he's not interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
He is 100% laser-focused on the 1% of 1% of deer. That's what he likes to do. Adam Hayes will not shoot a buck under 170, period, end of the day. That's what he likes to do. We talked about this morning, Josh. The football field is 100 yards long and basically 50 yards wide, 11 people on offense, 11 people on defense, and it's an equal playing field.
Mm-hmm.
Every single hunter, you, me, Rendell, Ryan, Justin, we all have different playing fields.
Right.
We all have different amounts of time that we can hunt, different areas we can hunt, different family lifestyles, you know, or young kids, no kids, 20-year-old kid, young kids. You know, we all got different things going on. So it's not there's no way to have this, I'm the best hunter, or, you know, the way I do it is the best way to do it, or the way he does it is the best way to do it. You know, it's all in what you want to do and what makes you happy. That's my soapbox opinion anyway.
Keeps coming to me. I got to say it, man. Let the good times roll.
100%.
You know what I'm saying? I think that's really what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, comparison is the thief of happiness. Mm-hmm. And, man, it's hard, especially for kids nowadays. Like, it's hard not to try to compare yourself to the you know, 10,000 people that you can see on the internet now. Like, whenever I was growing up, I didn't have much to compare myself to, you know, deer hunting wise. And now I feel bad.
Yeah.
I feel bad for him sometimes, but
the pressure that we got starting our channel, just probably more pressure on ourselves. Just, you know, we gotta produce. And finally I told my brother, I was like, listen, we're just out here having fun. Let's just have fun. And I got three guys that never deer hunted until this last year. And he, you know, a couple of them, you know, should I shoot it? I said, listen, shoot it. Just shoot it. It's a dove. It's a spike. It's, as long as it's legal, shoot it. Just shoot it. And I, so, but I always tell them this one thing is just say, every year, challenge yourself to go to that next level. That next level may be an age. That next level may be points. The next level may be a certain way of killing it, whether on the ground or up in a tree. But just always set goals and just challenge yourself each year. And if you do that, it doesn't matter what size it is. Just put yourself to a challenge and say, I want to do this, and set those goals. And so that's what we do, is just we have fun with it and just challenge yourself. Your own personal goals, whatever that is, it's up to you. Go from there.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think, do you feel like helping multiple or hunting multiple states really helps you with that? Because then you're not pigeonholing yourself into, you know, the back 40 at home, and, you know, you can go and have fun and you don't.
I do, yeah. Yeah. You hunt multiple states, multiple opportunities. Right. But I have a lot of time where I am and my what I do with Osseo gear and where my family life is. My wife, if I stay home longer than a week or two at any time during the year, she's like, don't you have somewhere to go? Right. So I've got a really cool wife that you know, she's like, bud, you want to go hunt for 2 weeks in Alabama, knock yourself out. You know, that's absolutely fine. But now the other side of that coin is, if there's something she wants me to do, she doesn't have to say it twice.
Right.
You know, she says, hey, you need to be home for X. And buddy, I will jump and be there.
Yes.
But it's a good, healthy relationship with my wife. But again, every family life is different.
Yeah.
You know, young kids, man, that's the priority. When Jack was little, I mean, I've told you all this, you know, when I had worked in Africa for a long time, and Jack was 2 years old, and I'd been in Zambia and Tanzania for 90 days. And I flew home, and she was, and I got home at like 11 o'clock at night, and she was at the airport holding Jack. And she met me at the airport and said, you got a decision to make. You're either going to be a professional hunter in Africa, or you're going to have a great family. And, I mean, I made that decision overnight.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when you got those young kids, that needs to be your priority, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely does.
Right. So I need to lower my standards, is what you're saying.
No, I don't think you need to lower
your standards. You're not happy, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? If you're not happy.
No, with, no. You know. And I feel like it was a successful season. Yeah. I don't feel like I didn't have a successful season at all. It was just, I just, part of me, I guess I feel guilty a little bit, because it's like, I don't know. So many people were like, oh, man, I'd be happy with that. But I don't know. Like, you know, like Ryan had mentioned, it's like your goal. So, you know, like, I don't know. I really have – I think it's an internal struggle with, you know, the goal of
– the struggle is this. The struggle that a lot of us, the trap that we fall into, is that I've got my goal set, and my goal is a 150.
Yeah.
Right? And we get through the season, and we haven't killed that 150. And we're looking on social media, and Joe's killed 3 bucks. Josh has killed 2 bucks. Rendell's killed 1 buck. I ain't killed anything yet.
Yeah.
So what do? Do I shoot the 140? Because we care what people think, and we care what's going to happen on social media. But you look at a Higgins or a Hayes or a whoever, Bobby Worthington or an Andre, they don't give a crud what anybody thinks about them.
No.
They could care less, and they're going to kill what they want, when they want, and how they want to do it. And if it takes 3 seasons – takes 3 seasons.
Yeah. And the reality is, none of those people on social media care either. Joe Miles don't care what you shoot.
I don't. Right. That's right.
Yeah. And it's like, exactly
yeah. Right. Yeah, they don't care at all.
Yeah. And like, yeah.
There's people that think I killed those Booners this year, last year.
Yeah, like, right. They
don't know. I was like, you're my friend, and you don't even know when I killed
they
these
don't,
deer.
Yeah, like, it doesn't. Dan always talks about that. He's like, dude, I don't remember what you shot last year or this year. Like, I can't. Right. I don't care. And I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as deer hunters.
Absolutely.
And I've done that since I was a kid. I can remember being like, I killed bucks my first 2 years of hunting. And I can remember thinking, like, I want to shoot a buck every year, and putting a lot of pressure on myself to kill a buck. And this was before I even had a freaking cell phone, you know. I don't know, maybe it's human nature, but.
I think so. I think it's a competitive nature in all of us. But if you really could step it back, you know, before cell phones and social media. Hell, none of us knew what our neighbor was killing, you know. We might have only known what our neighbor was killing, but we didn't know beyond
that.
It
was a family celebration.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, hey, my goal back then was kill mature deer, and that was it. And if something got me excited, I'm sending it. So I think it's just part of growing and maturing as a hunter, really. I think, you know, we kind of got to go through some rough seasons to learn, right?
Yeah, you learn more from failure than anything else.
Amen. Yes, you do. Joe, I wanted to ask you about entrepreneurship in the outdoor industry. How, you know, I have a lot of friends, you know, and other younger guys trying to, you know, they love the outdoors. How do you, what is your advice to some of these younger guys out there, like, looking to try and make it in the industry? I think, you know, when it gets down to, like, pressure and seeing success, it's like, it's almost like smoke in the mirrors, you know, yep. A little bit. And I just wanted your opinion on that.
I don't know that it necessarily is the hunting space. It's really any business, right? Is if you're able to solve a problem, I think that's the key, is that whatever your concept is, try and not have blinders on. And if it's in the hunting space, does the product that you're thinking about launching really solve a problem, right? So with Osseo, the problem I saw, or the gap, I saw a gap in the industry. The gap being that there was really high-end technical clothing out there. It was high-speed stuff, and I'd used a bunch of it, but it was really lacking a good whitetail hunter pattern. So that was the problem, or the gap that we saw, and that's what we created.
Yep.
You know, there's lots of different examples of solving a problem, right? And so that's what I would encourage a person, and really think about the product. You know, a guy will come up with something, the acorn crusher, I always use that as a joke, but does that really solve a problem, or right. is it gimmicky? You know, we're all, I think everybody here is Lone Wolf Custom Gear, or have used some of the DeQuisto stuff, or some of the Beast stuff. You know, those type mobile stands change the industry, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was a problem. Those stands were heavy. The climbing stands were dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so these guys pioneered that and brought in a stand that was, they solved a problem. Much lighter, much safer, easier to hook to the tree, and they solved that problem. We talk about saddles. Rendell's a big saddle guy. And, you know, you start getting into crooked trees where those lock-ons wouldn't fit, or the time to set them up, another problem, mm-hmm. you know, that was solved. So that would be a very long-winded, I guess, dialogue there of what I would do as a young entrepreneur, whether they want to get into the outdoor space or any space for that matter, is first and foremost, if I'm going to launch a problem, a product, does it really solve the problem? And if the answer to that is yes, then you put everything you have into that. And do not, you talking about hate from shooting a 120. Buddy, when you launch a product, the hate that is coming your way, that's stupid, that's dumb, it'll never work. Take those comments and put them in your motivational folder, mm-hmm. and read those things every morning when you get up at 4:30 in the morning and you're up and you're worried about what's going on, and read those comments, and that will fire you up to stay after it. It takes a tremendous amount of work and dedication. And you've got to stay disciplined, and you can't quit. Yep. You just got to stay after it, stay after it, stay after it.
I mean, we've all been hitting the gym, you know, the past couple of days. And
Whoa. Not all of us.
Hey. Rendell's turning behind his shoulder right now. Now, I've heard this from Jim. All right, well, me and Joe hit a couple of days. Today was fun. I had a blast working out with all you guys. Yeah. It was a great time. But something that Joe keeps coming back to, maybe it just stuck out to me, is comparing, I guess, entrepreneurship and hunting and stuff to, like, special forces. And, you know, you mentioned what separates the elite from the elite of the elite.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They've all got discipline. They've all got the work ethic.
Yeah.
But who's doing the extra stuff, right? Who's fine tweaking and who's just that much more consistent?
Yeah.
And is that really what it boils down to in anything?
I'm actually going to see them tomorrow evening. Some guys that were high speed dudes in the military, and you know they talk about it all the time. What separates the good military guys from the elite? And it's two things. It's attention to detail and discipline. Those are the two things. Now, work ethic falls in that. But, you know, we were talking about this morning about they're all in great shape. Mm-hmm. You know, they all can do 500 push-ups and 400 pull-ups and run the mile in 4 minutes. I mean, I'm, you know, not being real here. But what separates those elite groups from, you know, the others is the discipline and the attention to detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's bulletproof, and you know, like to just touch on what you had said about, you know, finding a gap and finding a solution. I think that's what everybody says about, you know, pretty much everything entrepreneurial. It's kind of like a broad spectrum of find a solution to a problem.
Yep.
And keep at it. And just,
I mean, I guarantee you that with the bow minds and the hunting minds that are sitting in here right now, you and I went and looked at the site today.
Yeah.
We liked everything about that site, but there was one problem with it.
Yeah.
And we went away from it. I guarantee you right now we could pull in 3 or 4 sites, really high-end sites, and start going through them and saying, okay, what do we not like about this? What do we like about it? What do we like about it? And make a list, and we would come up with a new site.
Yeah.
And we could do that with every product.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a thing that you can do. But you've got to have the experience. You know, if you don't know, like if I went in and wanted to create a McDonald's, mm-hmm. I don't know that. We've been in this industry long enough, we've got the experience, mm-hmm. right, to be able to look at stuff that's really going to help the end user.
Yeah. And like I agree with everything you said about entrepreneurship and stuff, but you're downplaying yourself. Like you're not talking about what it really takes. Like these ideas we're coming up with and the Osseo gear idea, that's easy. Like ideas are cheap. It's quitting your job, taking the risk, you know, having 2 kids, quitting your job and starting some stupid podcast. Like that's the hard part people don't want to do. And if you don't want to do that, then keep going to your 9-to-5 and not deer hunting. You know,
the work is endless. I mean, a guy asked me today, he said, hey, do you think you could come do a seminar here? And I said, buddy, from 2 weeks ago, I have one Sunday off until March 18th. And we're talking 4:30 in the morning it's 9:30 at night, and we're doing a podcast right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the work is unbelievable, but I really feel like the juice is worth the squeeze because I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the industry. Look what we're doing right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is awesome. I get chills, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
We talk deer hunting basically every waking minute.
Yeah.
That's what we love.
Yes. Yeah. It is. I think, you know, kind of to rebound this into hunting, I think a lot of people, Randall, you included, you know, we have a lot of people come up and give you hate because like, oh, well, you killed a Boone and Crockett. Oh, well, you're in Iowa. It's irrelevant because you're in Iowa. Well, you know, I mean, we both have moved from where we grew up at. I mean, if, you know, what did it take? You had to sacrifice to get to where you're at.
Right. Yeah, I went to Iowa with nothing. Lived in a tent for 6 months. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that about
wheel camper that was falling apart for 6 months and worked every crappy job under the sun.
Drink your own piss.
Yeah, drinking my own piss and didn't have running water. Was crapping in Walmart sacks and, you know, eating hot dogs and mac and cheese every day. But what he's piggybacking off what Joe said, sacrifice, like going after it, like you got to have the balls to do it. Yep. You just got to go for it.
Yep.
And you got to do anything it'll take to get there within reason. I mean, you don't want to be shady because that's bad luck in the long run. But I would focus more on skills besides hunting, because just because you kill deer doesn't mean you're a businessman. That's for damn sure.
Amen.
Yeah.
You better work on your business skills, communication, even leadership, not being negative. I got a long list of crap I need to work on.
It boils down to work on yourself. If you really want to do anything in life, you want to better yourself, you got to better yourself.
Yeah,
you
self-improvement.
You got to be honest with yourself in the mirror.
Right.
You got to know what your shortcomings are. We all have them.
Yep.
And try to work on those.
How'd you get to where you're at? By setting goals, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And achieving them.
Yep.
You know, one bite at a time. How are you going to eat that giant, you know, giant burger or whatever it is?
An elephant. One bite at a time.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think not having an ego helps too, because everybody's a person in the long, you know, no one's really that special at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I mean, like your special ops guys and stuff like that, what do they all say? Burn the ships.
Burn the ships, baby.
That's right, man.
That's right.
Yeah, there is no return. You can just see it through, and there is no option.
Let's talk about what everybody's doing now, other than trade shows, to kind of get ready for the season.
Yeah, I think that's a good topic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Fire go ahead, kick it off.
Scouting. I had a bunch of regular SD card cameras I ran in the public land around where I live, you know, within an hour of me, and I'm kind of collecting them, trying to organize camera pictures. Like, I'm horrible about my camera picture organization. Nobody else has that problem, but I'm kind of horrible. I got thousands of photos everywhere. That's something else. I'm trying to build folders and whatnot. A couple guys, I mentioned that on a podcast a while back, and like some guys that are into like programming and stuff, like sent me programs that they built themselves to organize stuff, and you can filter stuff out to, you know, by the, I don't know, moon phase and everything else they put in there. But
That's super technical,
man. Yeah, I don't know if I'm that. I don't even go back and look at most
of mine. I just try to keep it simple with the property, and then do it by date, and then I only save like the pictures that are important to me.
Yeah,
like the bucks or like a young buck that might interest me.
I'd love to talk to Mark Drury about that, because that guy, like, I've heard him talk about his trail camera, like, just strategy and how he organizes it, and it's super detailed. He's probably talked about it on the podcast. I could probably find it, but
mine are by property, wind direction. So I'll drop the bucks in the whatever wind. I'll make folders for when they show up, and then I got hot doe dates. If I notice a doe looks like she's coming to heat on the camera, I drop it in the hot doe folder.
That's a good idea.
So I can keep track of rut windows and different deer herds.
Yeah. Yeah,
very smart.
Bow and arrow too. Starting to tinker with that.
That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm getting ready for this trad experience.
I really
trad bow. Do I get my lessons?
Yeah,
I'm waiting for.
Don't get yelled at anymore.
I'm waiting for Joe to tell me what to do.
Yeah,
I get it. Secondhand information.
Yeah, secondhand.
Yeah, that's right.
What's everybody's setup? Broadhead and arrow.
Me?
We'll just go around.
Yeah, so I shot a prime Revix last year, the 32-inch bow, shot 65 pounds. I've had some elbow issues. They're pretty well resolved. I ordered a 70-pound bow this year, but and then I shoot a Hamsky. I shot the prime arrows last year too. It killed all my deer with a dead meat.
Yeah, I love those things.
Great. Yeah, head. Not to be like, I feel like I'm pumping up G5 outdoors right now, but they
that's
make
a great,
great
head.
Yeah,
the and, meats have taken over. They're the number one selling broadhead.
Yeah, they make all kinds of, I mean, that company just produces quality
they
stuff.
They are a great company.
Yeah. And then I was shooting in a B3 slider for a while. Had nothing wrong with it. I have a prototype, so it had some bugs that weren't worked out. The production stuff's fine, but anyways, I switched to Sword 5-pin sight. I don't know if you remember that company.
I do remember Sword. Yeah. Real good tolerances.
Yes. Super sight. Quality. If you want just a fixed pin sight, good, really good sight. Pretty affordable too, like 100 to 120 bucks. But I tried a back bar for a little bit, and I just ended up taking it back off. I shot pretty good with it on, and maybe slightly better. But I ended up going back to just a Beast Stinger stabilizer with up front. I think it's an 8-inch one. I don't know how much weight I have in it. I mean, I moved them around, but I took some off and put some on, but I don't know actually what I ended up with. Tight spot quiver.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You know your arrow weight?
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, that's
it. No, yeah, it's like, it's a...
1,500.
No, it's like, I think it was like 450. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then I shot, well, now we don't have to get into the trad bow stuff. Don't worry about that. Go ahead.
I have been shooting the V3X. I didn't do the Phase 4, and I'm interested in shooting the lift, but the V3X Epsilon Hampsky Rest. Shoot the black gold dual tracks. Got a green 019 as my top pin, and then a point or the 010 for my bottom pin. I get 30 and 40. And I do shoot a back bar. I shoot the Matthews, I think it's called Flatline back bar stabilizer.
The real cheap ones?
Yeah, the real cheap ones. Yeah, that's right. Well, I hadn't bought a new bow. So
right, you got
I
some.
I had that one for like
3 years. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what I do with the stabilizers is I will draw the bow back with my eyes closed.
Yeah.
And when I open them, if the bubble's not level, I'll tweak, start playing with weights and all that till I get them. They make machines that you can put them on and it completely levels the bow, but then it takes the human element out of it. And guess what? There's a human shape
yeah,
in that bow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I prefer to do it that way. I'm sure target archers would argue with me and say my form's wrong or something. It should be on the balance thing, but I like to do it my way. Arrow-wise, I shoot the RIP TKOs by Victory, and I'm shooting 74 pounds, so I'm shooting 300 spine arrows. Total arrow weight, 470 grains. I shoot the Rage Tri-Pan broadheads. Heat vanes is what I've been using, but I've looked into those Q2s. I think those are pretty good vanes as well, and then I shoot nocturnals. And I actually had some issues. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners would have some other ideas about lighted nocs. But I would love to try some more out. I don't know if I just got a bad batch of the nocturnals, but I had a terrible time with them coming on when I'd put them on the string. And it could be some of them I've shot through animals, and so it could be I'm not saying anything's wrong with the nocturnals. I just had an issue, and it could have been that batch. Let's see. Quiver. Oh, y'all will laugh at my quiver. I shoot a $39 G5 quiver. It's called the headlock quiver.
Yeah, the little circle one that
Freaking love that thing. Mm-hmm. It's got a little screw-in piece that is like the male end that you screw into the tree. It's got a cam. You cam it off. It pops right off that little circle thing, and onto the tree it goes.
Super simple design.
Oh, my God. And it's I've had that quiver for years and years and years. We're back on the G5 train, but that's a great quiver. Did I hit everything? Am I missing part of a bow?
No, I think
did you
did.
Do arrow weight?
Arrow weight, 470.
Talk about your pin gaps. You're talking about you sight your bow in at 26 yards?
Yep. So what this is a speed thing.
Yeah.
So if you're 290 to 305 in that range, you can sight your bow in at, everybody's different, but depending on your draw length, but at the end of the day, the speed. I sight my bow in at 26 yards, and then my top pin is at 26 yards, and then at 30 yards, I'm about an inch low, and at 5 yards, I'm about an inch high.
Mm-hmm.
That way, when I get in my tree, most all of my archery shots are inside 30 yards, so I've got one pin, and I will range a circle around me that's 30 yards, and then I know if that deer, hey, if he's inside that tree, I don't have to worry about anything but that top pin. Mm-hmm. And it simplifies everything.
Yeah, we did. Me and you both forgot releases.
Yeah, I shoot a Carter first choice thumb release.
Yeah, yeah. I have that True Fire Hardcore, and I wanted to do something different. I've had the thing for like 10 years now. I just can't get away from it.
I'll stick with it, brother.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and I shoot like in the in the off season, I'll shoot a hinge sometimes and whatnot. Do not like thumb button releases. I punch the crap out of them things, but anyway.
Yep, that's my setup.
So I got into this hodgepodge of trying to switch out of my old bow I've used for like 13 years and getting a brand new souped up,
yeah,
you know, super expensive bow. And man, it was just a train wreck for me, I think. So I'm exploring other options this year. I'm down to like two bows I'd like to try out for this season. But this past year I shot the Matthews Atlas long draw bow. And I had custom strings on it, Spot Hog, Fast Eddie XL with the 3-pin, which I like the vertical stack. I learned that. I really like the vertical pins. Mm-hmm. The Spot Hog weighs like a pound. I don't really like that too much.
Yeah.
But it's bomb-proof, so mobile hunting like I do, I'm tearing through God knows what out in the woods. So I've had other buddies have issues with different sights, you know, coming loose or getting knocked, so... Wanted to try Spot Hog. Love Hamsky Rest. I got those on both of my bows. Hard to get away from that. I just didn't shoot the Matthews well. It just didn't really fit me. So there was
you struggle just because of your draw length finding a good bow for you.
Well, I just found out. I mean, after shooting the draw length that's properly set up for me, I just think I shoot a short draw bow way better. Like I'm just so used to it for like my whole life since I taught myself how to shoot like thousands of shots. I'm just used to a little bit shorter draw and dropping my face into the bow. And my older bow, I don't know, just shoots really good. So it's just a feel thing. Maybe it was just a hang up on me, but there are some things about the Matthews, and they're great bows. You know, I'm not knocking them. It was just some things I didn't really like about it.
Well, I mean, and maybe you can comment on this, Joe, but the longer you draw, the more things can go wrong.
Without a doubt.
I mean,
especially in a hunting situation where you don't have perfect form.
Yeah.
You know, you got a long draw and you're shooting a 3D tournament or on a golf course. Yeah. I mean, you have a long draw. Buddy, you have to start torquing stuff and shooting around limbs and under limbs.
Not as accurate. I mean,
yeah, you're not as accurate. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and the bow's a little bit, I mean, it's pretty big bow, like to be toting through stuff. And my older bow's quite a bit lighter and smaller. So I felt like it's just more important for me to fit in this. Places that I'm hunting and when I'm crawling through stuff, I like that little bit lighter, smaller bow. And when you're toting it a couple miles,
yeah.
But my old bow is like a Struthers. It's like a custom run by a guy that used to design bows in the industry for other companies.
They had those at the little pro shop that used to be in my town.
Yeah, and that's a shooting man. That thing just shoots, lights out for me, anyways. But on that bow, I got a Trophy Ridge fixed pin. It's 5-pin sight. It's a React Pro. It guesses your pin gaps for you, which it's not super accurate, but I'm just deer hunting, like I don't really care. And I got the Hamsky on that. I got a Trophy Ridge quivers, the hex light or whatever lights up the ground sometimes. I use it or not. Stabilizers, I like light bow, so I don't really use a stabilizer much. I just don't like them because they just get in my way when I'm in cedar trees or moving the bow around, especially saddle hunting. I've learned since the tree's in front of you or next to you, a long stabilizer like I had on that Matthews, it just clanks on everything. Kind of drove me crazy. But then the arrows, I use I call them Zinger arrows. They got a name for it. It's Caniana, Cantana, something. Yeah. I always mess it up. Sorry, guys. But run that, and I run the, man, like 13 years. Pretty much every deer I've shot since I moved to Iowa has been with the G5 Dead Meat or the Mega Meat. Yeah. Even when they were called the T3s and they keep upgrading them, I just, man, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah. Like, they're amazing heads, and they zip right through those 300-pound bucks. And, man, it really knocks them down, too. They die quick. So
they got a new head coming out. It's going to be sweet.
Ooh, buddy, I'm so excited about that.
And I shoot full shaft arrows. I don't do the whole FOC crap because full shaft, it's really hard.
Yeah, you got a weak spine if you start putting stuff up there.
So I'm running like a 250 spine, about 500. I try to get the lightest arrow I can because I like hunting public land. I can't cut shooting lanes. If I'm looking through a hole, I want to be able to shoot through that hole and not have to worry about, okay, where's it going to rainbow to? And I can't, just the speed, I don't have to guess the yardage is good. Like I can be off Because since my draw is so long, I can be off like 5 yards and I'm still going to smoke right through the deer.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the vitals and not drop underneath or over the top of it. So I really like the speed aspect of the lighter arrow setup, even though I'm shooting 500 grains, but that's kind of light for full shaft.
Yeah.
Shooting nocturnals, had the same issue Joe had. I got them from a couple different stores. Every time I click them on, boop.
They turn on.
Drove me crazy. Because then I got to either take the arrow off, screw the broadhead off, and, you know, shut it. Then I bought one of those tools, and I had to keep it in my...
Shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. The rangefinder pocket on the Osseo hoodie or jacket, I kept it in there, and I'd pop it out. And turn, I mean, I was like, oh man, if this thing goes off when a deer comes in, man, I just was worried about getting pegged. Even sometimes just like practice drawing, it would pop that light and knock on, and I was like, what the heck's going on?
I used to never do that.
Yeah.
I hate it in the dark. Like you get set up in the morning and knock one.
Super bright. So I started just using white regular knocks. It was like, all right, the light and knocks are out. It just got frustrating for me. So that's pretty much my setup. I just like simple, whatever works. I used the nose button last couple of years, but I talked to Joe about, you know, kisser buttons versus nose buttons.
You didn't use a peep for a while.
Yeah, I went the no peep route because my buddy from Tether, Jared.
What do you think about that, Joe?
He told me it was going to be a train wreck.
I didn't tell you that. I told him.
Well, I think I only went with the nose button, like Jared from Tethered shoots, peep, nose button. I think I needed a second anchor point, and my form's not the greatest because I taught myself how to shoot, but it's repeatable. And I'm a procrastinator, so I didn't really give myself a lot of time to learn how to shoot.
Season with no 3 days, I don't have a string on my bow yet.
Yeah, dude, it was bad, man. I had like two bows all torn apart everywhere. I did try. Montana Black Gold Mountain Light, I tried that too, man. I was just switching all kinds of stuff, man, like, and then I was like, oh, season's almost here.
Yeah,
plus I hunted September. I wasn't really used to that, so
yeah,
I always felt like, oh, I got another month. Well, nope, oh, September's here.
You guys keep talking.
So time management, I kind of like got messed up on that a little bit, but that's pretty much
run for your life.
Yeah. Is that the taco salad?
It was delicious.
So this year I'd like to get a new bow to upgrade my old one. So I'm looking at two different bows right now. I really like the specs of the Prime RVX 34. It has the same, almost the same exact specs as my old Struthers bow. And then I shot the Hoyt Alpha X 33. And that bow really impressed me a lot, too. So I'm kind of in between those two bows right now.
How about you, Ryan? What's your setup?
So this is my second year. I put a little plug in this. Second year bow hunting, and so this is all new to me. I'm learning a lot, like, every year. Last year, just kind of, like, figure out how to shoot and get consistent and go from there. But I got my bow off Craigslist. $500, Matthew Z3. And nice. Ready to hunt, and started shooting, and it was great. And so that's my bow I use. It's got the Trophy Ridge single pin sight. I've got the QAD drop away rest on it. Shoots great for learning first bow. My arrow setup, I have the True Fire release. And then my arrow setup is what I updated this last year. I got some RIP TKOs, and I'm shooting the Exodus broadhead. And I had the same problem with the light and knocks.
With nocturnals.
This year.
Interesting.
That's unbelievable.
This year. Last year, no issues.
Yes.
I changed my arrow setup. Yes. And I had to get a smaller, and I had the issue this year.
Three guys.
That's crazy. Four. Oh, you too?
Are you serious?
I was trying not to interrupt y'all.
Man.
Oh, my. That's crazy.
And honestly, I thought that it was always part of the blood because, like, I try to kill deer and reuse my equipment.
Yeah.
And I think once you zip one through a deer, the blood gets on the inside of that little plunger. And I think that it actually gets a little sticky, even if you don't see the blood in there. It gets sticky, but I've had the
same thing.
Mine
were brand new right out of the pack, man.
I've had it happen brand new. And See, my thinking was like, oh, well, maybe it was just like that one that, you know,
yeah,
I shot, because you practice with them, right?
Yeah, I bought them. I bought them from different stores at different months of the season.
So what's the cure to just like save your number one arrow and just not shoot it?
I'm gonna start playing with some other stuff.
Right.
There's one called Halo. There's a guy named Tim Gillingham, big shooter. I'm sure a lot of guys listen to this note have heard of him, and I think it's called Halo or something like that. That he really recommends. And I got a buddy in Texas shooting them, and so I'm trying to get some feedback on that, but.
I'll definitely look into that. I was talking to Chad from Exodus. You know, they build all these arrows, and it was interesting. He was like, "I think Firenox the best," but man,
you got to have a PhD from NASA. I got a pack of those and tried to put them on.
Oh, really,
Cameron?
I'm
Cameron
good.
Oh man,
with Exodus, he was laughing at me. I was like, "Dude, well, what the heck? I got to put batteries and glue and
not just like, that. No, I mean, the price of them." It's like $60 to $70 for three.
Yeah, that's high.
Yeah, it's
what I did was I went through all the nocturnals and I found the one that wouldn't do it, and that was my killer. And yeah. I used it every single time.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
I mean, I'm in a blind in Mexico, and this thing won't stop. And I have to pull my pocket knife out, and I got my pocket knife in the dark that close to my string, and I'm going, this is a terrible idea.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you just take it off?
I did.
Okay.
I did. Because I was worried. Okay, so, yeah, I take it off, I turn it off, and then I put it back on the string, and it goes off again.
You don't just pull your knockout?
Yeah, but when I put it back on the string, it's going to go off again.
Oh,
yeah, so mine kept doing that, too.
On the string,
oh, man.
Turned it off.
Yeah.
See, yeah. I had one morning, I just put the damn thing in my pocket and used a different arrow.
They're all
I mean, it's a shame. We shouldn't have to do that. No, you know, that. We're spending all this money on quality gear.
Right.
Well, I sighted my bow in with the nock, so switching to a regular nock that wasn't lighted, I was worried about, like, string pinch and, like, how much is it going to affect my arrow flight, things like that.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they weigh about 12 to 14 grains.
25.
Okay. 5 grains. Okay. Yeah. Well, my bow setup for last year was the Obsession Nitro Ghost. Absolutely love Obsession bows. I love really like the draw, and it's smooth, and I've just, you know, been happy with them. I switched up. I've always been such a hardcore 5-pin guy. I had a Spot Hog Hunter forever, and it is a bulletproof sight. I mean, you can literally beat the crap out of this thing, and it does not move. But I did an elk hunt this year, and I wanted
you
to get a slider.
This year. You killed a monster elk this year.
Thank you. Now, I just wanted to be covered, man. I wanted to make sure if I had an elk at 80 yards that I could send an arrow, you know, with accuracy. So I did the Fast Eddie with the slider on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And loved the sight. It was phenomenal. Got everything dialed in, got my sight tape on there. Was real happy. Got a QAD, I think just the HDX drop away. Mm-hmm. Arrow setup, I think I'm running the Black Eagle Deep Impacts. I've run them for a long, long time, probably 7 or 8 years. And I just kept that motto, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. When I switched arrows, I was constantly getting good pass-throughs. So, and I've shot QAD Exodus heads for a very long time. But after talking to Rendell, I had switched late season to the Mega Meat. I seen the holes that they put in deer, and I was like, all right, well, it's about time to try them out. And they flew great, so whatever. Did not get to kill anything with them, unfortunately.
Me neither.
But other than that, I did a lot of different tuning with my arrow this year. I did the Q2. Is it Q2 eyes?
Yes.
The Fletchings?
Yeah.
Good God, they're heavy. They are literally, I think, about 7 grains a piece. I did weigh my arrow compared to last year, I think I was like 490. This year I was pushing 515, 520. And I didn't do it intentionally, but I got a custom arrow wrap, you know, with our logo on it.
Yeah.
And put those new fletchings on, and the wrap was heavy and the fletchings were heavy.
And if you get those double dog protective wraps, it makes it even heavier.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
Arrow wrap.
But they were great. I'm glad I had a heavy setup for the elk, because I put a frontal shot on them, and it paid off. But what else? Stabilizers. I run an 8-inch bee stinger, nothing fancy. And I switched up to a tight spot quiver. I really like the tight spot quiver. I was always really, I tried to be cheap, man. I never really, I mean, whatever. A quiver is a quiver. But when I think when you do a Western hunt, you really, you know, you want to have that quiver on the bow. You're not popping it off. So I wanted something tight to it. But yeah, I don't think I left nothing out.
Release.
My release. I shoot a Carter Just Because, and I have two of them. I love it. I'll probably never change it. It's a three finger. I've shot a four finger, and I don't know. For me, the three finger is just perfect, and it's got the hole in there, which I really like because I feel like it's a better grip for my hand. I can grip it really well, and it tucks right away. And it's crisp, man. There's nothing like you. I mean, I'm sure you've shot a lot of releases. The Carters are amazing.
Yeah, the tolerances and repeatability of those rests.
Very good company, too. I actually got one mailed to me. I bought online used from a buddy. Y'all laugh at this. I got it out of the mailbox and was being lazy that day. Pulled on the opposite side of the road, you know, rolled my window down, grabbed my release. There's a car coming in my lane. I drop my release and I run it over with the truck. Oh, I didn't even get it out of the packaging and I crushed the release.
Oh, man.
So I looked at it. It's a little bent. The lumen's a little bent, but I crushed the barrel off of it. And I called Carter, sent them the release, and a week later they had it back and they fixed it, rebuilt everything for about $20.
So. Oh, sweet. That's good.
Yeah. I'm not affiliated with Carter. They're just an awesome company. A lot of tournament archers use them. So.
Oh, yeah.
If you're looking to upgrade your release, look into them.
Yeah, they do a good job.
Yeah, and my total, I got into my airway. It's like 5'10", but I'm going to lower it this year. I want to get some more speed.
I think so, man. I mean, we've seen the pendulum. It is starting to come back. You know, we went on a big, big rabbit hole in this heavy arrow stuff, but we're starting to see it swing back to where it needs to be. And we're whitetail hunters, man.
Right.
We're not shooting hippopotamuses in Africa.
That's true.
Although I've shot a few of them.
Yeah.
But we're hunting whitetail, man. Those things jump. They're fast.
Right.
We're in timber where you've got limbs to shoot over and shoot under. You know, just exactly what you said. You're mobile where you can't cut shooting lanes and you have holes you've got to pick, and trajectory is a huge part of that. I'm glad to see. You know, you got guys coming back from that, really that 430 to 500 range. Mm-hmm. It just seems like that's really killing era for whitetail.
It almost seems like everybody, like, wants what they don't have. Like, back in the day, you couldn't shoot a light arrow. All you had was big, thick aluminum things, and everybody wanted a light arrow.
Yeah.
And then the carbon came out, and then everything got light. And then somewhere, like, 2018, like, everybody started wanting heavy stuff again. Then, like, freaking aluminum arrows came back a little bit. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
Like, Easton started making aluminum, like, the old-style arrow. I think it was a lot for the traditional community. But and then we started the heavy stuff, and now it's going back again.
Thanks a lot, Ranch Fairy.
Yeah, yeah.
The fairy duff.
No comment.
You want to get back on the topic of what we're doing for this season? Or right now? Because we kind of stopped there. Yep. We got on the bow topic after me and Joe mentioned bows.
Yep.
Absolutely nothing, because I'm at trade shows for 3 months. Can't scout. Well, I'm get to scout some other states. I'm trying to fit it in when I can.
Yeah.
Like going, well, if I can walk, I can do a little bit with Johnny Stewart here in PA, but I'm probably not hunting PA.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
you'll learn something, though, walking around with Johnny.
Yeah. I'm diving more. I've been talking to Joe about, like, I'm looking more into knowledge, different areas that I'm not good at, like rut hunting, really diving down that Bobby Worthington rabbit hole and trying to change up things that, you know, I haven't done in the past to try to maximize my effort and get more efficient at the season. And we talked about in another podcast, like, you know, now that you can hunt a bunch, it's way different than when you only hunt 3 days a week. So changing everything about that and learning from that. So, it's like a total retool of what I'm doing. So. That's pretty interesting,
and that's adapting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's changing, and that's the progression of a deer hunter.
Yeah,
you know, adapting, changing, overcoming obstacles, new states, new scenarios, and if you get so fixated on this one way of doing things. You know, the whitetail, the only thing that's consistent is the inconsistency of them.
Yep. Yeah.
And being able to adapt and keeping an open mind and checking that ego and picking up knowledge from other people. You know, as soon as you get to that point where we're getting off topic, as soon as you get to that point where you know it all.
Oh, yeah.
How much?
Oh, yeah.
That's when you're going to have a season that you will remember.
Brother. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
But, yeah, as far as doing stuff right now, I'm a lot of trade shows, got some seminars coming up. But as far as my plan when March rolls around, would be doing some camera tests. I like to tinker and test stuff. Mm-hmm. And we got off on the bow tangent. But we'll be doing some stuff with some trail cameras, testing those out. A guy named Steve Pinkston's got a new battery pack that supposedly you can get twice as much time. I really want to put that out and see how that does, because I've got some areas that, you know, you can have mineral and stuff like that on, and I want to just see how they do and with the text cams. So I'll be doing some testing on that. Obviously, always messing with the broadheads. As far as there are some new areas that I want to get into, some different parts of the country. Don't say it. He did this the other day.
Atlantic Ocean.
He did
somewhere in the ocean.
Florida.
Yeah, Florida. That's right. Antarctica. There's a
Tampa
penguin,
Bay.
There's a penguin deer in Florida. So that doesn't matter where it is. If there's a new area you want to go hunt, now's the time to you kill that deer now, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right.
You kill that deer now. And so I'll be working on this new area quite a bit. And then my old areas, I will go in, make sure, because I'm a rut funnel hunter now. I really have bought in hook, line, and sinker on that particular tactic during the rut. So those funnels that I have that I know are really good, I will just go in and make sure the lanes are right. I'll already have stands hung in there. I'll go ahead and have mock scrapes in there. All that will be set, done, dusted, cameras in there, turned on, ready to go. So that'll be my rut will be set. And then I've got some stuff at home. You know, we've got the river bottoms I hunt in South Carolina. There are no real funnels, but there's some feed trees. There's some saltus that drop early. There's muscadines. And I will actually go in. I'm going to do this for the first time ever and start dropping a few trees here and there to try and push these deer, you know, a little bit tighter. Because I don't always like to hunt on the X, like on the feed. You know, you've got two X's. You've got where he beds, which a lot of times is unknown, and you've got the X of the food, right? Where he's going to end up. And you hunt on the X, you maybe one chance. If you hunt on the way to the X, you might can get multiple plays in there on the food. Mm. So on the way to the X, I'm going to try to set up some funnels to quote unquote corral them down or get them to come through there, because it's so open where we hunt.
Right.
You know, they can come from anywhere and they can bed anywhere, and it's big river bottom swamp and it's flat as a pancake. So that's a new tactic that I'll be trying. So that's kind of my progression from now until, you know, July.
I'm going to be working on manipulating some private land, you know, trying to funnel some deer, like you had said, down in there in certain areas, so I can even better, you know, figure where they're going to come from and where they're going to come through and kind of block them off. I think sometimes, you know, that's can be the easiest way to approach hunting if you got a piece of private that you can manipulate. And then I really want to focus on killing something good out of state. I've talked about it over and over again, and I really, really want to make it happen this year. So I think I love shed hunting. I want to spend at least, you know, 3 days in a couple areas that I've been looking online at, and try to figure those places out.
You do any shed hunting, Randall?
I do not at all. Don't like it.
I don't know why. I love antlers.
I'd rather just scout. Yeah. If I find them, I find them.
Yeah.
How about you, Joe? Are you a shed hunter?
We have at home, so I would have to travel to shed hunt. The mice and squirrels at home, they eat them about the time they hit the ground. Mm. It's unbelievable. I mean, you find a few every now and again, but it is so different. Mm.
I hear Illinois is real bad. Is that the case?
I don't know.
So I was talking to one of the guys. I was talking to a recent guy we had on our podcast about that, and he said – The Illinois is god awful for it. I guess porcupines and them big fox squirrels.
Yeah. Iowa's got those giant squirrels. Yeah. I find a lot of sheds gnawed up.
I wouldn't think it'd be any worse than anywhere else, though, in the Midwest. No.
I mean, if I find a big shed of sheds, it's cool, but I don't.
Yeah, you don't go out.
I don't go out of my way for it. I feel like I'm more efficient scouting for where I'm going to be hunting at in October versus walking a cornfield for 3 days trying to find a shed out there.
Right.
So I'm just trying to be more efficient with my time at
what
my major goal is.
Are you killing, you know, this fall's deer right now? Do you feel like that's happened for you?
I mean, I believe in my major success comes from postseason scouting.
Yeah.
This past year was my first year I didn't really postseason scout, and I relied all on in-season scouting. And I will say that, man, I wasn't really a big fan. It was kind of a hot trash.
I know
we had
talked about that. You're like, in season scouting, I think that's what's going to kill feel this like year. And
if you do all in season scouting, it's almost like you got to be way too aggressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm aggressive, but you got to be extra aggressive
because
you don't know where the bed is.
Right.
And that is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like when I postseason scout, I'm finding and identifying the bedding areas, and then I'm not disturbing anything. I can go back, set up, you know, mock scrapes like you were talking about, putting the cameras in during the summer, slip right out. One day in, never go back. And then I got the intel. Then so I can slide in and check the perimeter. Okay, well, this rub line opened up. I know there's a buck in there. Make the plan. Then I can set up. Or I get a picture. Okay, that buck's using that bedding area on this wind now. Yeah. And then I know he's in there instead of, every day, I'm just going to go dive in the woods somewhere and guess, be like, oh, I think the bedding's over there, which sometimes you hit on it. So a lot of times you don't, or there's no sign there at all. Then it's like you did all this work. I went 2 miles in there and found nothing to hunt at all. And then you're just like, well, I'm gone, and you just wasted a day of hunting. Yeah. So I feel like that way it's not very efficient. I think if I shot something in Illinois or Iowa and I just want to go, I think that's where it comes in. You fly right out. And if you transition that, I don't think you're going to have the time, effort, and scouting that you need to stack early season bucks. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think you should concentrate on your home state or maybe one other state like September. Like Iowa opens October 1st, so I can concentrate on that, but maybe I'll, you know, like, Wisconsin or Nebraska, Kentucky. Yeah. I can focus on one other state kind of to hunt early. But like Joe was saying, the rough funnel thing, when's the most deer activity? It's always last week, October through November. I feel like that's when you're stacking the deck.
Right.
And when you roll in to out-of-state hunts in that time period, your odds go way up just to randomly encounter a buck on hot sun.
Absolutely.
But early season, probably not happening.
Yeah. So, doesn't really apply to early season at all because a lot of the sign you're seeing is kind of withered away from early.
Yeah, and if you hunt September states, there is no sign.
No.
You got to really pay attention to, like, scrapes aren't even open yet. You're just looking at the little licking branches broke off.
Oh, yeah.
Or
you
food,
saw when we scouted this summer.
Feed, yeah, and you got to do a lot more observation since I learned that. I wasn't observing enough. I was, instead of spending 3 days glassing a field, man, I was just going right in there, just tearing it up, and then been like, all right, I got to go to another one. I'm just burning up so many places, and then I can't go back because I already, man, that buck was like, whoa, oh, here's this guy. Like, you know,
they definitely,
I mean, Bobby Worthington talks about that a lot.
Yeah.
The buck's only going to daylight maybe a couple times before the rut, and you're going in there and you're slapping him on the ass, you know?
He won't even hunt until the end of October with it being 5 to 10 degrees cooler than it normally is. He doesn't even start hunting until then.
Yeah, then
that's an old woodsman brother that knows his stuff inside and out.
Man, I need to take that.
Yeah, so you got more odds of that buck moving in the daylight that time of year. I mean, you can still do the bedding hunting, but I think it's got to be really concentrated. And less, because sometimes more is not better. Like, it's too much to take on and then take off to go do your stacking of bucks during the rut.
Yeah. Have more calculated spots instead of just throwing darts at the big wall, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, Joe, we talked about Kentucky
yep.
while we were working out this morning, and you did something that nobody would do. you just went down there a couple days beforehand and you sat there in glass fields. And if you didn't like what you saw,
left, went home.
Yeah.
That's could be family time.
Yeah.
Running home. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Yeah. Most guys would stay and hunt no matter what. Like, that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah. Instead of going home.
I glassed bean fields for 3 days that I had access to and observation. 100%. I saw 25 bucks during that time and not one mature deer that I would want to that I would personally want to shoot. And I went home.
Yeah.
My mistake this year was scouting too many public lands in the off season. I scouted starting in February, and second year in public lands, so it was just like, okay, let's find them. And scouted too many, and was just I bumped around too much. And just
simplify your options and narrow your focus.
And so I feel like in the season, especially closer to the rut, we started seeing certain public lands. It was like, okay, this is this public land is producing some bucks. So we just kind of put that on our list, and we're just going to kind of narrow it down this year and just pick maybe one or two areas that we say, okay, let's just focus on this and go from there. This year, scouting for me is probably not going to start to – I want to do it now, but with everything going on, it's probably not going to start till about April. So right now it's just collecting what I need to collect out of the woods and then get ready and start scouting in April and go from there and narrow it down.
Yeah, and I'm experienced, and I feel like I made the same mistake you did.
I felt like that's exactly what you're saying. That's what I was doing, and it messed me up.
And then sometimes it just takes listening to somebody. Like, again, back to Bobby Worthington. Persistence. I gave up on deer way too quick. One sit, gone. And then I'm all over, like, hundreds of miles away the next day, and I'm over here and there. Like, instead of locking in and hunting that buck down and bouncing around, like I don't know, it's like I lost the confidence to, you know what I mean, I just got way too jumping all over, and then you got 1,000 spots in your mind, you're worried about winds and all this stuff going on,
second guessing everything you're doing.
And then especially after you have a bad season, well, not really a bad season, but I didn't kill anything the season before, so that's on you. And then you just get down this rabbit hole of just chasing your tail. Instead of keeping that confidence up, you start second-guessing everything you're doing. And that's a bad place to be.
The first part of the season, I jumped everywhere. And it just wasn't working. And I actually was jumping so much, I wasn't even seeing deer. Like, that's where it was getting bad. And it was like my 23rd hunt in. And it's the one buck that I saw last light all day sit. And that's the buck I killed. And it was after hunting that same property 4 times in a row. That's the only time I hunted the same property multiple times.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like that, man.
Just,
you just got to keep going. I mean,
and that's where I said, you know what? I should have just been hunting this same property, you know, consistently.
Yeah, if you know there's a deer there you want to kill.
Well, we had a bunch
of deer.
Don't
waste your time there if there's nothing there.
100%. You know. Leave.
Yeah, we had a bunch of good deer on camera. It's just I would go there and it wouldn't see anything, so I'd go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the next day a buck would show up. And I'd go, man, I should have been there. But I was somewhere else hunting. And so it's just figuring out instead of jumping 5-6 places, pick maybe one or two.
Yeah.
Just focus on it.
Limit your options and narrow your focus.
Yep. You know? All part of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You'll never stop, man. I don't think anyone.
Yeah, we all suck at it sometimes, man.
Dude,
I suck
so bad. If guys could only see me in the woods most days, they would never listen to me on a podcast again. They'd be like, what in the hell is this guy doing out here? Yeah. And just like he said, Indiana, man, I found the deer the first day I was there. And guess what? I pulled off of them. To go find deer, I didn't even know if they were there or not.
Yeah.
I was climbing 2-hour drainages and up saddles and all over, man, instead of just sitting in that one area where I found those deer the first day. And then I went back the last day, and I had a really, man, super heavy mass buck come through. Just didn't work out for me. But, man, if I would have had a couple more days in there, if I would have sat there the whole time,
right,
man, I probably would have smoked a good one. But
yeah,
no. Oh, man, I'm just too smart for my own good. Well, too stupid for my own good sometimes.
About 1,500 feet, I started to think the deer were wearing Osseo because I couldn't find them either.
Yeah, I was like, man.
I love that Osseo plug. That's a good stuff.
Yes.
I think that's something we all have in common, the old Osseo.
Yep.
Shameless plug.
That's funny.
I had a guy on the way out. He's like, I went and shook his hand, like a guy that I knew, and he's like, man. how's your hand so warm? I'm like, Osseo, baby. He's like, that's a good salesman right there.
That's good stuff.
I was gonna say a zinger right there, boy.
he's wise in his own. Oh,
yeah, thought about it.
Oh, that's funny. Man. I think it's funny that like we're all sitting here like worried about not shooting a deer this, and like those old guys like Dan and Andre and other. They could care less.
Yeah, that's wild.
Care less.
You know, we had dinner with Adam Hayes. Like, he doesn't care if he kills a 150 again in his life.
No,
you know,
never.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't even get his bow off out of the case to go mess around with it, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe that just comes with older age. You get comfortable in your own skin and being okay with what you want, you know?
I think all those people, I think Joe included, it's like, it could care less what somebody thinks.
Well, Joe kills like 6 a year, so.
That's true. Yeah, he's real kind of, yeah. That's kind of, yeah.
He's killing like 20 bucks, and I'm just like, really, dude?
He's depressing all kinds of 16-year-olds.
Can I get it?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a 16-year-old cheerleader. I'm like, bro. Like, nobody's business.
Like, can you drop me a pen, Joe? Come on.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
It's been fun, man.
Yep. I'll tell you what. Been on here. We can wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to keep going, I always like closing it out. I think it's a great thing to close it out with. I've always learned a lot more from failures than successes. Why don't we all share, you know, one failure we've had, like maybe this season or something that really sticks out that's kind of helped you grow as a bow hunter. Maybe something that shines, you know, that might be relevant to some of the listeners.
Daggone, I gotta go first.
Yeah,
this is the whole podcast tomorrow morning with Exodus is about failure, so I better guess think about it. This season, I really want to get better at being more patient with the deer I shoot. Like I've killed so many deer between 100 inches and 130 inches, and I've killed some bigger than that too. But I don't know. I think I'm at the point in life where I'm okay with not shooting another one of those, you know. So I mean, I've killed whatever, 6 deer more than that the last couple years, and I don't know, I've gotten good at killing those ones. I think next year I want to really step it up.
That's your goal, right?
And who knows, I may next year, I may not, but that right now, yeah. But that, I think that's something that I kind of, and going to Kansas helped me there, because it kind of like opened my eyes. Like, I let some deer walk that I, you know, usually wouldn't, because I was seeing other things. I'm like, okay, I can do this, it's okay. So that's something that I learned this year, was just a little more patience in my deer hunting arsenal. And also I'm horrible about talking about being patient, about not going and sitting whenever you shouldn't be there, or just going because you want to go hunting instead of those days you want to go sit in a tree, maybe go scouting or go do an observation set. Just because you don't have a bow in your hand, you're in a stand, doesn't necessarily mean you're not doing something productive and getting better at that. I mean, Andy is good at that too. Andy May, you know,
really good,
doing a lot of scouting. So, in season from afar, not necessarily just because, you know, not necessarily with the bow in a tree stand on my back, but I don't know if I'd answered any questions, but that's the things I thought about this year that I wish I'd have done better at.
Yeah, I had a 10-point in Columbia, in South Carolina, that whipped my butt, and I found myself relying too much on cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I haven't done in the past. But I was so frustrated with him, I tried to overflood the area with cameras. And it was too many cameras. Whereas if I had just stayed back and hunted the way I should have hunted, you know, with the little bit of funnels we had. For example, if I had been persistent, I have a funnel. I have a fenced-in, this is a big property that I have permission to hunt on. I have a fenced-in duck pond. So that the hogs, we have terrible hogs down there.
Mm.
And what that fence does is those deer have to go around one end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a camera right there. and I was not, I was getting a few does pictures and this, but I had seen that buck as a 4 year old go through there in daylight in the end of November, end of December. And if I, and I had a bulletproof stand, I would actually walk in the duck pond, climb the fence, because it's only a 4 foot high fence, just so the hogs can't get in there. The deer could jump in, but they don't want to because it's on a big dike. And I climbed the fence right up into my tree. And if I'd sat there for every morning that I had the right wind, I'd have killed that buck because I got 3 daylight pictures of him. And guess what? There was an 8:30 a.m. picture of him walking right by that stand. So that, you know, that's the lesson I learned. Again, well, it's not a lesson I learned. I've known that lesson. I've known it forever, not to rely on the cameras, right? To hunt where you're supposed to hunt and stay after it and stay persistent. And I backed off of that a bit and was so reliant on the cameras, and that was a mistake. And I failed on that deer. I didn't get him.
Yeah. That's, I think we all fall guilty of relying on cameras, you know, at some point. I mean, if you're not, you're not real. I mean, I think it's
– You're probably not running cameras.
Yeah, you, yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, I think it's just a natural thing that we all go through. I can relate to that too. I think.
I mean, we had dinner with Cody the other night, and you know, he was talking about, you know, the dopamine those cameras provide you, and I think that's very true, man.
It is.
I mean, I know I've got a bunch of them out there, and I would get up and for 2 hours sometimes in the morning, I'd get up at 3 o'clock before I had to go to work and have 2 cups of coffee and, you know, look at trail camera pictures every day, and that was, I couldn't wait.
Deer Hunter social media.
Yeah. Yep.
Serious. All the time.
How about you, Randall?
Oh, man, I mean, I don't even know if I can name it. All the mistakes. Good God. I can't say it was a failure because I learned more this year than I ever have. And I know for me, like, my major takeaways were, man, I just learned a lot about myself. I hunted more than I ever have, pretty much ever, and I felt like hunting just wasn't fun anymore. I put way too much pressure on myself, bad, almost like, man, I was just like, what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? I was almost like I was talking negative to myself. Like, well, you suck.
You do that a lot. You know
what I mean? Like, what are you doing? I'd get in a tree and I'd just look around and be like, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you here, bro? And then it's like, got the EHD and, man, that tore me up. I just lost like a lot of motivation. Like, things just started spiraling, you know, getting in your head. And so I made that mistake, like we talked about, bouncing around too much. I think I got too stubborn, too. Like, I should have bailed out of my area. I felt like, man, if there's a buck, I'm going to find it. If anybody can find it, Rendell Eric can, you know, I'm going to dig my heels in and go through all these dead deer areas and try to find a buck, which I did end up finding, you know, one during the rut, and then I found another one late season. But, I mean, that was it. I don't know. I just made tons of errors, mostly a lot of man-made errors in my own head, I guess. My mental game was not good at all, so just pressure. So
working on yourself?
Yeah, working on myself, trying to modify things. But I learned a ton, so I don't know. It's like whatever. It's like Joe said, just because you didn't kill anything doesn't mean anything. You got to learn not to give a damn. Like, yeah,
100%.
Yeah, I just care too much about things when I shouldn't. Just growing, you know, getting older. And I still could have killed deer, just weren't up to my own expectations. So it's not a complete waste. I still got to hunt a ton and be out there. I don't know, should just be grateful, you know, for what I could do and not get hung up on just killing deer so much.
Just let the good times roll.
Yeah, exactly. Make hunting fun again. So that's like, I just want to have fun, man. This whole year is just like, just go, just have fun.
Yeah, this year for me, I think my mistake was just getting away from myself the previous year, which was my first year really bow hunting. But the first year it was consistency in the same areas, learning those deer, learning their movements, and just staying in there. And this year I bounced around. I think that was my mistake. I'm excited about this next season because I've got the places down and I'm just going to focus on them and trying to learn what's there and see what comes through and learn that terrain and go with it. And so that's what I'm excited about. This next year, but I think that was my failure this year, was just, and it was made for a long season when you don't see deer at all, none of those, nothing. and then you see only a couple here and there type thing. And so, you know, Lord bless, and I was able to get a buck this year. Wasn't expecting it. I already had all my camera gear was already put away at the time, and I just had my phone, and that's the only reason I even got it on camera was because of that. But it was that last minute. I mean, I just was not expecting it. And so, but that's what I learned this year, was just narrow things down, have fun, and be consistent where what you are doing, be consistent at it. So that's pretty much what I learned this year.
Absolutely, man. I think it's really cool having somebody like you, you know, with just starting bow hunting and getting your opinion, because I think we all can learn something from you, to be honest with you. I mean, it in this room, it's it's kind of, I feel like we've all been doing this for so long, we kind of forget sometimes in the beginning of how things are and how much different of a time it is now versus maybe when we were younger and just starting bow hunting. Yeah.
Also, the more you know about it, the more complicated you make it for yourself sometimes too. I mean,
I know when I was a younger guy, man, I ran into a ton of great deer, and now I'm like, I have way more knowledge. I have way more connections, and I have way less encounters.
Did I hit the golden ticket right there? Because, man, I started listening to podcasts and all this crap, and I'm trying to do everything everybody else is doing.
Yep.
I think I'm a way worse hunter now than I was before.
Yep.
Like, holy crap. I'm thinking about 80 things when I try to set up. Man, I'm talking about, like, what the thermals are doing off a hippopotamus's butthole 100 miles away, bro. Like, come on. Like, before, I would just go and be like, there's a deer, there's a tree. Yep. All right, I'm getting in it.
This looks like a good spot.
Yeah, now I'm
just
like,
set up here.
Licking my what's the calculational... The calculational of milkweed at 4 o'clock when the sunlight's at this angle. Like, man, way too technical, man. Like, it made me not a good hunter at all. Just need to be more freestyle, go with the instincts, and not overthinking all this crap.
Just have fun and hunt the wind.
Exactly.
Right? That's what I did when I really first started killing dead ones, was just... What's the wind doing, and where do I want to try to set up?
Rindle is a shorts machine, man. YouTube shorts machine.
It really is. Hippopotamus. Yes. That's not where I would
want to
be any time of my life.
Oh, man.
Fly by your brain.
Yeah, I was just like, man.
I love it. I think for me, I tried to be way too mobile this year. I knew in my head, I found a pinch right along a cattle fence, and if my ass would have just hung out and put a good set in a pine tree or a cedar and hunted it when the wind was right, I'd have killed. I had
100
multiple.
It's second grade arithmetic.
That's right. And yeah, with that exact spot is where I'm talking about manipulating these deer. I am going to make a even tighter funnel and a pinch, and I got my tree that's ideal. But I was just trying to make it happen all over the place. And it's like, you know, these deer are ping-ponging back and forth. And it's like, where's the tightest spot that you can narrow them down? Especially if you're hunting the rut. Early season's a little bit different. But, you know, I just feel like, when's the time is your highest probability time to kill a good deer?
The rut.
Unfortunately, yeah, you know. It's the truth, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it depends what you want, too, though. But, like, you guys are all talking about the rut and, you know, putting your time in the rut, during the rut. And, like, you talk to Dan, he has no interest in doing that. He loves being mobile, jumping around early season. He loves, that's what he wants. He could care less about sitting in a tree for, you know, 12 hours during the rut. Like, so it's like, I don't know.
And here we are complicating.
If you don't like doing that, like, is it really, you know, if you don't enjoy doing that, are you? Is it should you do that just to kill a big buck? Like, I don't know, you know.
I mean, if you want to kill a big buck,
yeah.
I mean, you got to do things you don't want to do. It's weird. Sacrifice.
It's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean,
though,
it's not going to happen for you.
But then
you
get like you during the end of the season, and you hate hunting. Yeah. You know, it's weird. It's hard to hard thing to juggle in your head.
But I feel like you should be a good enough hunter to be fishing at all phases of the game, and not. I shouldn't be trying to do early season tactics in the rut.
Right.
Or late season tactics early season. I should be focused on being the best hunter I can be throughout all phases of the season. And if rut, man, I jump around a bunch, and it's like, man, you just see the daylight. We're all right. Well, I should be sitting a lot longer and not be jumping all over.
Yeah.
And if you want to kill that deer, man, you're just going to have to buckle down and just sit there.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
You just gave me a thought in just saying that. As a new hunter coming in, bow hunting, the first couple sits, I noticed, and someone made a comment, and the statement they said is, you can't hunt like a gun hunter. You've got to change your mindset just a little bit when you're bow hunting. Don't hunt like a lot. Yeah. Right. Well, I didn't understand at the time. I just thought, okay, well, I've been gun hunting before, so that's how. Well, you just made the comment of hunting like you're in the rut in early season, or the opposite. And that just gave me that thought of something that I need to pick up on as a new hunter, is learning what are those phases, what are those tactics, and then learning where to place those. Mm-hmm. And so that's something now you just gave me to focus on for this next year. So that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, when I muzzleloader hunt, I can shoot like 300 yards. I'm set up 15 yards away like I'm bow hunting. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Yeah, it happens. I mean, you just got to get in there and just do it, man. I mean, and if you only want to be a early season hunter, man, just hunt early season and stay home the rest of the time, because you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
The -30 is what I don't want to do.
Kentucky sucks. In
Negative 30s are amazing. What are you talking about?
I would love to kill a velvet buck. I just seem to not find the caliber of buck I want.
Joe knows. It's rough.
Yeah.
Bad to food.
It is.
Food to bed.
Maybe I'll get lucky one year and find a giant and kill him, because I'm all for it, but it's just tough. I mean, Rendell and you and I were out there. I mean, we scouted all over the place. Did we find?
I probably got cancer.
Yeah, he was so worried about
permethrin.
So worried about permethrin. I didn't know he was a nerd like that. But
I don't know. I don't like chemicals.
It beats the option of getting covered in chiggers.
Lyme disease.
I'd rather take that. Right. Pour kerosene on him.
I mean,
yeah. I don't want permethrin on me, but I'll pour kerosene on me to get rid of chiggers.
Drink urine.
Yeah.
play with hippopotamus.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a weird feller, I guess.
I guess. It's
I concur.
Man.
That cures it all. Yeah, man.
You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, you want to close this out?
Yeah. Check out the description of the podcast. We'll link everybody's stuff down there. And thanks for hiring us all to come here and mess around.
Yeah, man.
Thanks, Joe.
That's awesome.
Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yep. Really,
thank you.
Really anytime,
it's been
guys.
A blast, man.
Really appreciate y'all.
Yeah. So,
thanks.
All right, everybody. Talk to you later.
See you.
Bye.
Deuces.